Maxwell House Coffee presents The News of 1939. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. With Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce and Hadley Stafford, Connie Boswell, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, and tonight's guest of honor, Terry Wilson. And here is your host for this evening, Robert Young.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight's big excitement is one of those things that make radio a lot of fun. Namely, whereas, and to wit, none of us on the Good News program know exactly where Frank Morgan is. When last seen, he was heading for the Los Angeles airport, and he told us he was going to the fair. But we hope to pick him up somewhere in the course of the program. Up to now, we haven't even got a clue. So Meredith Wilson opens the program with a song built around that familiar radio stall. Stand by for further announcements. Meredith, you'll start it. I'll struggle along in the second chorus. Here's some music, dynamite. Baby named the day tonight. Stand by for further announcements and more good news. Back again, and now we're done. City Hall just made us one. Stand by for further announcements and more good news. Time marches on. We've been here a year today, thanks to the FHA. We bought a home, and by the way, here's the payoff, here's the prize. We're rehearsing Lullaby. Stand by for further announcements.
That was very well sung, Bob.
This is where I came in. Say, Warren.
Yes, Bob.
Any plans for Morgan yet?
Well, not exactly. There's a man outside with his laundry. He wants to collect a bill for it.
How much is it?
7 cents.
He must have left all his clothes at home. Check all the libraries, hotels, and jails. Start with the jail.
Okay, Bob. I'll do what I can.
Say, this is beginning to look like a manhunt. I thought we could find Frank if we had a bloodhound.
I doubt it. Frank's anemic. But quit worrying about him.
Oh, I'm not worried about him. I like the idea of a hunt. You know, there's a certain way that you can tell whether a man was walking backwards or frontwards in the snow.
Well, Meredith, I doubt if Frank is walking backwards, even in the snow. And it's not snowing.
That's right. And, besides, I forgot how to tell.
Meredith, I can just picture you as a hunter.
What do you say, Bob?
I said I can just picture you as a hunter.
Oh, I sure am. I was a regular Nimrod back in Mason City. One season, I made my wife a fur coat from the pelts of the game I bagged.
Fur coat, huh? Mm-hmm. Red fox or silver fox?
No, it was gopher.
Gopher? Well, that's nice hunting. Did you ever stalk any field mice?
Well, you don't have to make fun of my hunting now.
Oh, I'm only kidding, Meredith. I suppose it was pretty good sport popping off those gophers with a .22 rifle.
Oh, we never used a rifle.
No?
No. We used to sneak up on the gopher hole with a bucket of bran and arsenic. Gets them every time.
Well, that's a lively sport.
Sure. Not only that, but I used to make around $2-3 a day on the bounty.
Well, I don't see how that's going to help us. There's no bounty on Frank Morgan.
I know how to find him, Bob. Let's figure out psychologically.
Psychology now.
Well, it's very simple.
Can't even say it.
It's very simple. All you have to do is say to yourself, where would I go if I was Frank Morgan?
Well, I thought of that, and I'm afraid he's there. But we've got to be more practical.
Say, Bob, we just got word from the sponsor that we have to locate Morgan and there'll be trouble.
We did, huh? Well, what do they want us to do about it?
The order is to find him, even if we have to make a direct appeal over the radio.
Okay, go ahead and appeal, Warren.
I'll try it. Calling Frank Morgan. If Frank Morgan hears this, will he please telephone the NBC studios in Hollywood right away? That is all.
Isn't radio wonderful? Hello?
Hello, is this NBC in Hollywood?
Yes.
Is this the Good News Program?
Yes.
Well, my name is Frank Morgan. What do you want from me?
Wrong number. Well, Warren, we better quit hollering for Morgan and get ahead of the program. Meredith, will you get up on the stand and see if you can provide a background worthy of Miss Connie Boswell? Ladies and gentlemen, the fairest flower of old New Orleans sings Cole Porter's Begin the Beginning.
May begin the beginning. It brings back the sound of music so tender. It brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory of dreams. I'm with you once more under the stars. And down by the shore an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying. When they begin the beginning, to live it again is past all endeavor. Except when that tune clutches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever, and promising never, never to fall. Moments divine, that rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean.
So don't let it be in the beginning. Let the love that was once a flame remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember.
Oh, when they begin the beginning.
Oh, yes, let them begin the beginning. Make them play. Till the stars that were there before return above you. Till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you.
And we suddenly know what heaven we're in. When they begin the bugging, it brings the memory of Daniel here with me. When they begin the bugging.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. With Father's Day so close at hand, you might think that poor Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, would be shown a little mercy by his offspring. But Daddy's in a worse trouble than ever. Snook got sick from stuffing herself at a party, and Daddy's had to nurse her and put her to bed. On top of that, he's got a date with an out-of-town buyer to see a night baseball game. Here they are.
Daddy!
What's wrong, Snook?
Something's biting me.
Oh, nonsense. It's just your imagination. Now go to sleep.
I ain't sleeping. Put the light on.
Oh, all right. Now, what's biting you?
I think it's a turtle.
A turtle? How would a turtle get in your bed?
I brought it from the party. Here it is.
Why, Snooks, give me that thing at once. The idea of taking a turtle to bed with you.
Ain't it pretty, Daddy?
Yes, it's very pretty. But I'm going to put it in some water.
I want to sleep with you.
Oh, you can't sleep with a turtle, sir. Although I know a lady who sleeps with cats.
Who sleeps with cats, Daddy?
Mrs. Cat. You get it?
No.
Mrs. Cat. She sleeps with cats. That's her husband.
Have they got any kittens?
Oh, forget it. Now get back under the covers and I'll put out... My Snooks, what's this apple doing on the night table?
It ain't doing nothing, Daddy.
I know it isn't, but I told you to take it before you went to sleep.
Why?
Because the doctor wanted to see if you could keep it on your stomach overnight.
I tried, but it kept rolling off.
You were supposed to eat it. Well, I guess it's too late now, so go on to sleep.
Where are you going, Daddy?
I have an appointment with a buyer.
Buy me something, Daddy.
All right, I'll buy you something. Good night, I'm in a hurry.
Will you buy me a bicycle?
No, you can't have a bicycle. You're still too little.
Why?
Now listen, sir. When you were 5, I bought you a tricycle. When you get a little older, I'll buy you a bicycle.
When I get real old, can I have an icicle?
Yes, you can have an icicle.
I want it now.
Oh, you can't have an icicle now. Go to sleep. I'm late already.
Where are you going, Daddy?
I'm going to see a night baseball game.
Who is?
I told you, with a buyer. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Daddy!
Oh, what is it?
What does he buy?
He buys stuff from my firm. We sell paints and dyes. And this buyer is going to buy some of our dyes.
Why?
Because he needs it in his business.
What's his business, Daddy?
Dyeing.
Huh?
He's a dyer. He makes a living by dyeing.
He makes a living by dyeing?
Yes. He's been dying for 30 years.
Ain't he dead yet?
No, he's not dead. That's just his way of earning a living.
By dying?
Yes.
Why don't he get a better job?
Because he likes the job he's got now. Besides, he's a man of 50 and he can't start a new business.
Can he?
Why, no. If he wants to live, he's got to die.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
How do you always manage to get me so confused? I can make acceptable explanations to anybody in the world except you.
And Mommy.
Yes, and Mommy. I got myself a fine pair of females.
You like us, don't you, Daddy?
Oh, of course I like you, but now I've got to run along to that game. Good night, sir.
Good night, Daddy. Daddy!
Oh, what is it?
Oh, take me with you.
I knew that was coming. Now, Snooks, under no circumstances would I even consider taking you with me tonight. Oh, what are you yelling about?
My tummy hurts.
Oh, what's the matter with it?
It hurts when I squeeze it.
Well, don't squeeze it.
Oh, how can I tell if it hurts?
Oh, here, drink a little of this warm milk. It'll make you feel better.
What kind of milk is it, Daddy?
Now, what do you mean, what kind? It's cow's milk.
How does milk get in the cow, Daddy?
I don't know. Drink it. I gotta leave.
Does the cow have to drink milk?
No.
Where does she get it from?
From eating grass. The cow eats grass and gives milk.
Oh. If the cow ate milk, would she give grass?
No.
Why?
Because it is much more complicated than that. The grass turns into milk inside the cow's body, and it's gathered in hundreds of little ducts.
Where are the ducks, Daddy?
Inside the cow.
Can't you hear them? Quack, 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 quack.
Oh, I didn't say ducks. I said ducks.
Ducks? What's them?
They're glands. Let me get out of here.
How did the cow get the milk?
I told you, through the glands. The same way you get your tears when I thank you.
Ah.
Now, do you understand how you get milk from a cow?
Uh-huh. You gotta spank it.
That's right. Give me that glass. Good night. I've got to get to that ball game.
I want to go with you.
Now, Snooks, you get right back into bed.
I want
it. If you take one more step, I'll thank you.
Go ahead, Daddy. I want to get some milk.
Oh, what am I going to do with you?
Take me to the ball game.
No! Well, you can hold your head up. I will not take you with me tonight.
Stand by, ladies and gentlemen. Snooks and Daddy will appear later in the program. And I'm laying 8-5 right now. They both wind up at the ball game.
June time is bride time, as we all know. And all over this country, thousands of sweet young girls are going off on their honeymoons in the days of romance. So tonight, I want to say just a word to those nice girls. Now, of course, I know you young ladies know all about housekeeping. But still, I hope you won't mind if I give you a special tip or two about how to make really delicious coffee. First of all, you want to be sure the coffee you buy is really fresh. For here's an important thing to know. Air steals away coffee flavor. So all coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor the moment it's roasted. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where air can get at it, loses 45%, nearly half, its precious flavor and freshness in only 9 days. But when you buy Maxwell House, you're getting coffee that's truly fresh. For you see, we take the wonderfully enriched new Maxwell House, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven, and pack it in the famous blue super vacuum can. No air can get in, so no flavor can get out. This new Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen as fresh as the hour it left the roasting oven, with all its full flavor and goodness sealed in, none wasted. Now, second, you'll want to be sure to use the right grind. Remember, no one grind is satisfactory for all methods of making coffee. Now, that's why the new Maxwell House comes to you in two grinds. The drip grind is scientifically correct for any type of drip or glass coffee maker, and the regular grind for percolator or boiled methods. So if you want clear, full-bodied, flavorful coffee, just ask for the Maxwell House grind that's right for your coffee-making method. Why not try a pound of that new Maxwell House tomorrow? You'll find it sells at prices that are friendly to your budget. And when you serve the first cup of this tempting, rich, full-flavored Maxwell House to your husband, we wager he'll say,
"Gosh, darling, this is the best cup of coffee I've ever tasted."
Now, Meredith Wilson's old music album. And tonight, the pages fall open to a song that made a big hit with a dancer 25 years ago, called "Meet Me Tonight in Dreamland." But our forefathers never heard it played like this. Was played in its heyday more like this, more on the dreamy side.
Dreaming of you, that's all I do. I am there for you, I'm all I need. And in your eyes, blue as the sky, I can see the love light so sweet. Because you love me very much.
Thanks, Bob. Any word from Frank yet?
No, I'm going to broadcast just one more appeal, and if we don't hear from Morgan, we'll just have to go ahead without him.
Well, let me try it. I'm lucky.
Well, go ahead. What can we lose?
Okay. Good news program calling Frank Morgan. Frank, if you are anywhere in the United States, please speak up.
Hello, Los Angeles. This is WEAF, New York. Grebe Tuskett, engineer. We have Mr. Morgan standing by. We're testing through.
I'm right here, Bob. What's all the excitement about?
Just a minute, Mr. Morgan. We got this thing set up.
Yeah.
Wolf 29 testing. Wolf 29.
What's that?
I'm testing. Wolf 29.
Well, I'm Morgan Rutgers, 32. It's nice to know you, Mr. Testing.
My name is Tuskett. I'm your engineer.
Oh, engineer. Well, I don't need you, son. I'm flying back. I'm leaving in 2 or 3 minutes.
Do that, Mr. Morgan. You're on the air.
I am. How am I doing?
Well, the microphone's all set, so you start now.
Oh, I start. Yes. Well, this is good news of 1939. Once again, I bring you sponsored by the makers of Metro House Coffee. It's good to that thing. Tonight, you'll hear Fanny Bryce and Stanley Crawford. That's a clever little act. Meredith Maxwell and his office. And here's your host for this evening. This whole thing is ridiculous. None of these people are here. Well, I can't handle this.
Get the cameras over here. Make it snappy. Turn around, please, Mr. Morgan.
What is the
best angle?
Oh, what do you mean?
Just a minute now. No close-ups.
Well, I'll get some sleep, Frank.
Well, don't take them in the back, fellas. Candid shots. Bend over a little, will you, Frank?
What's going on here? Who are you?
Joe Snide, Metro Press Department. How's it, Frank?
Oh, terrible.
Now, one more shot, fellas, and I want to talk to Mr. Morgan.
How about a comedy shot, Floyd?
Comedy shot?
Yes.
Okay, Frank, give him the full face, will you?
Young man, may I say that I think you're extremely offensive, even for a press agent.
Oh, I'm the most offensive guy in town.
Oh.
But you can't say I don't deliver.
Yes.
Last year I had you in the public eye.
Yes.
This year I got you in the public heart.
Yes.
Don't tell him where you'll be next year.
Yes. Well, I have a vague idea, but don't go too far south. I wish your photographers would get out of here. They make me nervous.
Okay, fellas, blow, will you?
Yes.
Now, Frank, I got orders from the New York office to get a statement from you on your new picture.
Oh, yes. Well, The Wizard of Oz is undoubtedly my finest picture. It's a young fellow named Mervyn LeRoy produced it. I predict that the boy is going places. Very fortunate to have me in his picture because I give a magnificent performance.
Oh, sure. Who else is in the cast?
Oh, yes. Well, I have a list here somewhere. Here it is.
Uh-huh. Daphne, Louise, Margie, yes. Circle 5.
No, Margie. Wait a minute. That's the wrong list. Let me have that. You just say The Wizard of Oz has a wonderful cast. Judy Garland, Frank Morgan, and lots of fine people. Now, if that's all, I'll be running along.
Wait a minute, Frank. I got a surprise for you.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Oh, where?
In connection with the World's Fair.
Oh, the fair. Yeah, well, I've seen the fair, son, and it's imposing. In fact, you can quote me as saying it's as good as the New York World's Fair. I've seen them both.
New York World's Fair?
Yeah, but I think you're being a little misleading in your advertising. I looked all around your fair, and I couldn't find Treasure Island, and I didn't see hide nor hair of the Nude Ranch.
Well, Frank, Treasure Island and the Nude Ranch are at the San Francisco Fair.
Well, of course. I'm an honorary delegate to the San Francisco
Fair. Now you happen to be in New York.
I am? Well, that explains it.
Explains what?
Well, I kept wondering what the Statue of Liberty was doing in San Francisco Bay.
You certainly got yourself mixed up, Frank.
Well,
how do you start for San Francisco and wind up in New York?
Yeah, well, the only way I can explain it is when I got into the airport in Los Angeles, there was one plane for San Francisco and one for New York. And I should have made sure of the plane instead of the hostess.
Yeah, well, look, I told you a minute ago I had a surprise for you, Frank.
Yes.
But first, I'd like your candid opinion of our New York World's Fair.
Oh, it's magnificent. It's a fascinating spectacle, and the exhibits are very educational. In a Max Sennett sort of a way.
I can see you've been to the Aqua Cave.
Been there. I almost drowned yesterday. But it's a very good fair. Probably the best fair that's ever been put on without my advice and cooperation.
You put on fairs, Frank?
My dear boy, when it comes to extravaganza of this type, no city would dare go ahead without...
Just a minute. Now comes the surprise.
Oh?
Mr. Wise, would you be good enough to step out here, please?
Why, glad to, Mr. Snipes.
Frank, I want you to shake hands with a man who is personally responsible for much of the success of the New York World's Fair.
Why, Billy Rose, how you've changed. Well.
Just a minute, Frank.
What?
Well, that's all right, young man. Did I understand you to say that you've had experience in putting on exhibits of this kind, Mr. Morgan?
Grover Morgan, sir. The last of a long line of exhibitionists. My grandfather was Perisphere Morgan, a direct descendant... a direct descendant of Trilon Morgan. Of course, that's the Flushing branch of the family.
Frank, for the love of Mike, the guy you're talking to is the radio director of the New York World's Fair.
Well,
John,
I sprung. I thought he didn't look like Billy Rose, but he got... John Young! Well, I'm afraid I've made an unforgivable mistake.
Well, I don't mind, Mr. Morgan, but you better look out for Mr. Rose when you run into him.
Yes, I'm always in trouble with guys named Young. I'd better be going now. You know, schedules.
Wait a minute now. Just a minute, Mr. Morgan. Yes. I'd like to hear a little more about some of the fairs that you've directed.
You're interested in fairs?
Very much,
yes. Oh, as I see. Well... I don't suppose you got down to the Philadelphia sesquicentennial, did you, Mr. Young?
No, I didn't.
Well, I was the one...
But I did meet all the directors.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, that was a good little fair. It would have been better if they'd had me. Let me see now. The Pacific Coast Exposition in 1915. Did you get out there for that?
No, I missed that one.
Now, that was probably my best work.
I sent a man out there who brought me back all the facts and the figures of the whole thing.
Oh, you did? Yes. Oh, well, that's right. I didn't see that either. Did you get any facts and figures on the Chicago World's Fair in 1893?
I saw that one.
Oh, you saw that
one? I saw that one.
Well, you're certainly well-preserved, Miss Dion.
Well, thank you. What about the fairs you ran yourself, Mr. Morgan?
The fairs that I ran. Yes, the county state fair, bus fair. why should I have to run into John Young? I'm in Dutch again. Dutch. Holland!
What's that?
Did you attend the Zeta Z World Fair in 1925?
I never even heard of it.
Oh, well, there was a fair. Picture this sight for the side of the Zeta Z. An idealized Dutch fairyland with fascinating, spectacular exhibits from Amsterdam, Rotterdam, all the cities in Holland.
Wait a minute, what's that? Amsterdam, Rotterdam, rather, and Amsterdam?
Yes, well, you can't say damn on the air. I'm just trying to tell you.
Well, did your fair have a contribution from the Hague?
What's the mayor of Jersey City got to do with it? you mean the capital of Holland?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, it was there I got my great idea to glorify their principal national product.
Diamond.
Oh, no, Mr. Young. Their principal manufactured product is cheese. So I designed and built, at the entrance of the fair, an enormous palace composed entirely of cheese.
Well, that's a novel idea.
Oh, yes. I knew it would capture the imagination of every loyal Hollander, because their first glimpse of the fair would be this gorgeous structure of cheese, lofty spires of Edam, magnificent towers of pimento, great arches of cheddar, and the entrance gate of delicate tracery of gorgonzola.
Remarkable piece of work. How was the first day's attendance? Morgan.
The attendance, yes. Well, it would have been great except for one thing.
What was that?
Well, nobody could get near enough to buy a ticket. I never should have made the box office out of Limburger. Well, so long, Mr. Young. I've got to go out and see the Well, all right, John, if I can be serious for a minute...
No, I don't believe it's possible.
Oh, yes, it is. I've been in New York not quite a week, and I've been to see this marvelous fair 3 times, and honestly, I don't believe there's ever been anything like it since the beginning of time. Such an incredible variety of entertainment, amazing spectacles, breathtaking glimpses into the future. A person could spend months wandering around the New York World's Fair and never be bored for an instant.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that, Frank. That keeps our record 100% perfect.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean that we've had about 9 million visitors to the fair so far, And not a single one of them has gone away feeling let down.
Well, it's magnificent, and I mean it. Good night, John.
Good night, Frank.
Excuse me just a minute, Mr. Morgan.
Yes.
The folks over at the Maxwell House Mayflower Donut Shop here on the World's Fair grounds thought you might be missing your Thursday evening glass of iced Maxwell House coffee, so they sent this over to you.
Well, thanks, son. That's right. It's time for our famous old Thursday evening custom. All the gang out in Hollywood ought to be having their coffee right now. Hey, Bob Young out there in Hollywood. Do you know what day it is? I mean, time it is? Meredith, Bob Strasser.
Sorry, Mr. Morgan. We have to pause for station identification.
This is KFI, Los Angeles.
Yes, Frank, okay, we haven't forgotten. We're all here in Hollywood. And we're doing just what you're doing there in New York, enjoying some grand iced Maxwell House coffee. And once again, we invite all of our thousands of friends all over the country to join us in this happy Thursday evening custom. All served, everybody? Here's sugar and cream. And Meredith opens our second act with a new swing arrangement of a famous rhythm number of the 1920s, The Parade of the Wooden Soldiers. I'd like to have you all meet our distinguished guest for this evening, Terry Wilson, the MGM screen commentator whose trademark is...
What do you think?
What are you going to tell us tonight, Terry?
A fable entitled, 3 Days in the Life of the World's Worst Worrier. Now, a worrier is, according to my dictionary, one who worries. This is a story of a worrier whom we shall call John Jones because that is not his name. John Jones is not of the common or garden variety of worriers. No, John is a real worrier. Well do I remember the occasion when John Jones, at a social gathering, encountered a feminine kindred spirit. Yes, she murmured sympathetically. Indeed, I do understand, Mr. Jones. Would you believe it? I can worry myself sick over the tiniest trifles. John Jones arose in righteous indignation. You call yourself a worrier, he demanded. Why, I can worry myself sick over absolutely nothing at all. Our story of John Jones begins on a Sunday evening when he has to dinner at his home a lovely lady. During coffee, the telephone rang. It was John Jones' movie producer boss at the studio. who desired John Jones to go to work even at that hour of the Sabbath in order to deliver on the following morning a story which John Jones has said was wandering around vaguely in his brain. The lovely lady, anxious to be cooperative, would not even permit the courtesy of John Jones' escort to her home. She thrust John Jones into his study, closed the door, and summoned a taxicab by telephone. Some minutes later, John Jones was torn from his typewriter by the sound of the lady's scream. He rushed into the living room. "Look," the lady cried. "Burglars! Bandits!" John peered out the round porthole in the closed front door. At the curb was a blue coupe. In its open door was a man with a saturnine face. Clasped in his right hand was a pistol that looked 7 feet long. Then John Jones heard a small voice. He lowered his eyes. On the doorstep, not reaching up to the level of the porthole, was a small female figure. She wore no hat. She had a tousled mop of brown hair. That was all he could see. But at that instant, it only took an instant, the female dwarf or gnome turned and ran. In another instant, the coupe door slammed and the vehicle disappeared around the corner. No work for John Jones that night. But John Jones did not report the matter to the police. He settled himself down to worry about it. Arriving at the studio next morning, John Jones was informed by his secretary that two men had called to see him. They could return because, in their own words, they were very anxious indeed to have a chat with John Jones. Instantly, John's worries were doubled. "Didn't they give any clue to their identity?" he insisted. "Yes," said the secretary. "They said they were G-men from Washington." Now John Jones could indulge in some real worrying. He drove home on two wheels, hurtled his car into the garage, ran into the house, locked the doors and windows, and turned to find a note on the table. It was from his servant. It read, "Mr. Jones, there was a policeman here to see you today. He said he'd be back." So John worried himself through a second sleepless night. The next day at the studio, there was vague, unexpressed opinion that John Jones was starting to crack. Complaining of a headache, John fled home in the safety of the noonday sun. He couldn't eat, he couldn't read, he couldn't think, but he could worry. In mid-afternoon, John sneaked out the door to grab the evening paper from the lawn where the newsboy daily tossed it. But even as John stooped to pick it up, he saw the coupe approaching. It swerved in toward the curb. Then, as if suddenly cautious, it picked up speed and dashed out of sight. John rushed into the house and went to bed, a sick man. A really sick man. For doctors will tell you that worry is a tangible poison. He didn't tell his doctor what was the matter. Worriers just don't do that. At breakfast on the third day, John ransacked his mind. Although his conscience was clear, he managed, without much difficulty, to convince himself that the local police had reason to hurl him into the hoosegow, that the government in Washington could invite him to Alcatraz for criminal income tax evasion, and that the blue coupe housed someone sworn by a blood feud to pursue a vendetta with John Jones until his death wiped it out. And then he saw a policeman coming up the front walk. Determined to face the worst, John Jones went to the door. "Mr. John Jones?" asked the officer. "Yes," said John hoarsely. The policeman smiled. "Mr. Jones, I'm a great admirer of your work on the screen. I'm taking a night course in journalism at the university, and I wonder if you'd go over the thesis I'm preparing and give me some healthy criticism." If you think John Jones stopped worrying, then you don't know what a real worrier is. No, the vendetta and the G-men still remain. In mid-afternoon came another bombshell, a telegram. John's nervous fingers ripped it open. "From Washington? That's bad." But the signature was that of an old friend, and the message: "Gave two pals of mine a letter of introduction. Please be nice as their swell guys. They tried to see you Monday but couldn't and went to San Francisco. They'll look you up again next week. Incidentally, they're G-men." John Jones sat down weakly in a chair. But wait, there's still the vendetta. And at that precise minute, the blue coupe pulled up to the curb. John could stand the suspense no longer. He rushed out of the house and up to the saturnine gentleman, now revealed to be a quite harmless individual, who smiled, said, "You've got quite a lot of mail this afternoon," and handed him a dozen letters. It was the postman. It was all soon explained. Sunday night, the postman had an unlocated special delivery and thought John Jones might know of a stranger visiting in the neighborhood. But when the lady answered the door, the courteous postman had decided not to interrupt if John Jones was entertaining. The little female gnome, the postman's daughter. She was a movie fan, and she'd wanted to meet John Jones to ask him if he could possibly get her an autograph of Norma Shearer. So John Jones was finally convinced that all the mad and mysterious menaces were trivial incidents, and until he worried them into horrific dangers. He wouldn't believe that one of the most important philosophies of life is the fact that nothing ever turns out to be quite so bad as it threatens, which has been stated beautifully by a famous man who said that the greatest tragedies of his life were the ones that didn't happen. Of course, on the other hand, nothing ever turns out quite so well as it promises. But the average human being is prepared for this by the knowledge that this is earth, not heaven. And so he acquires a certain skepticism of all promised glory. The following morning, John Jones arose from 10 hours' luscious sleep, halfway to the studio, reveling now in the sunshine, the flowers, and the bright blue sky. Suddenly, John Jones was overcome with a surge of worry. He stopped the car by the side of the road. He clenched his fists. He gritted his teeth. It's strange. He couldn't place the exact frightful thing he was worrying about. And then he realized he was worried sick because he had nothing to worry about. Now, as I said, this is a fable. And a fable should have a moral, which is an admonition for those who read or hear to take heed and learn a lesson. I don't think any moral is needed here, for I'm sure neither you nor I could ever possibly worry the way John Jones does. I ought to tell you John Jones' real name. His real name is Carey Wilson.
Carey Wilson, speaking of worrying, reminds Connie Boswell to sing a new song hit, Don't Worry About Me.
Forget about me.
she is again, ladies and gentlemen, Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. Just as I predicted, Snooks has wangled Daddy into taking her to the ball game with him. The fourth inning has just started as they enter the ballpark. Here they are.
Don't drag, Snooks. Hang on to my hand. You give me enough trouble tonight. On account of you, I didn't get here till the fourth inning.
How do you know, Daddy?
Oh, it's right up there on the scoreboard. End of the fourth inning and the score is nothing to nothing.
Then we didn't miss nothing.
Ah, what do you know? Where the dickens are those ushers?
What, those girls in the middle of the field, Daddy?
They're not girls, they're men.
Then why are they wearing bloomers?
Nobody's wearing bloomers.
Mommy wears...
I don't care about that. Those men are wearing knickers.
Why?
Because that's part of the baseball player's uniform. Now, just follow me, Snook. I think our seats are right about here.
Why is that man running, Daddy?
Because he hit the ball.
Does he have to chase it, too?
No, he doesn't have to chase it. Now, these are our seats, all right, but I don't see Mr. Poop.
Who's he?
He's the buyer. Wonder where he is. Oh, he left his hat on the seat. Maybe he went to make a phone call.
Maybe he went...
Never mind. He'll be back soon. I want you to behave and watch the game.
I'll be good, Daddy.
And don't ask any questions. Just sit here and enjoy yourself.
All right, Daddy. Daddy!
What is it?
Who's that man in the blue suit?
He's the umpire.
Why is he wearing that wire thing on his face?
To keep from biting the ball players. Now, watch the game. The man at the plate is called the batter.
Why?
Because he holds the bat. The man who's throwing the ball is the pitcher. Now, watch him pitch. Bam! Strike three.
What happened, Daddy?
The pitcher just fanned the batter.
Was he hot?
No. He struck him out. Just sit still and watch the game. Oh, I wonder where Mr. Poop is.
Sit still, watch the game, Daddy.
Huh? Oh, yes. Hey, this pitch is pretty good. What a windup. Wham! Right down the middle. What a pitch!
He's good, ain't he, Daddy? He hit the man's back with the first shot.
Ron, hurry! Hey! Oh, that's Robert. He called him out.
Who did?
That umpire on first base. The guy was safe a mile. Get a pair of glasses, you big clock.
Suck him, Daddy.
Ah, that was robbery. Where the dick is this fool?
I want to play baseball, Daddy.
You can play tomorrow.
I want to play here.
Now stop that nonsense, Snooks. If you get hit with that ball, you'll really feel something.
Why?
Because it's made of horse hide.
What'd you say, Daddy?
Hide.
Why should I hide?
Hide. The horse is outside.
Bring him in, Daddy. I ain't afraid.
What are you talking about?
I want to ride on my horse.
You came here to watch a ball game, not ride on horses. Now stop squirming in your seat. When Mr. Poop gets back, I'll talk to him for a few minutes, and then we'll go home.
I want to go home now.
Well, you can't go home now. Oh, here comes Mr. Poop. Now, just remember, Snook, no crack.
Oh, hello, agents. I just got through calling your house.
Oh, I'm sorry I was late, Mr. Poop. This is my daughter.
Well, cute little type, isn't she?
Oh, sure.
Where's his hair, Daddy?
Shut up. Oh, Mr. Poop, how about coming to my house for dinner tomorrow night?
Well, swell. Have you consulted your wife about it?
Oh, she knows I'm going to bring you.
Yeah, they had a big fight about it this morning.
What? Oh, pay no attention to the child, Mr. Poop. She's just joking. Wonderful sense of humor. Well, pretty good game, isn't it?
What happened to your hair, Mr. Poop?
Oh. And Mussolini pays a bonus for him.
If you must know, young lady, my hair all fell out. I'm bald.
Does it hurt?
No, it doesn't hurt.
Why?
No. Agent, did you have to bring this child to the game with you?
Well, you see, her mother wasn't home, and I didn't want to leave her alone. But she'll be a good girl. Won't you, Snow?
No, I won't. I want to be bald.
Now, listen. Here's a quarter. Now, don't mention my bald head again. You understand?
All right.
Oh, don't you dare take that money, Snooks. You don't have to bribe her to be good, Mr. Poop. She can be good for nothing.
Well, she hasn't got far to go.
Oh, stop your yelling.
Then give me my quarter. I want my bald-headed money.
Oh, I'm going to get out of here. Where's my hat?
Oh, now, just a minute, Mr. Poop, please.
My hat. Young lady, do you know what you're sitting on?
Shall I tell him, Daddy?
Get off of Mr. Poop's hat.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry about this.
I know. It's not your fault. Call me tomorrow when you haven't got this little angel with you. Good night.
Good night, Baldy.
Oh!
Well, are you satisfied now? You've probably wrecked the sail for me. I knew I shouldn't have brought you.
I want to go home.
You're going to sit here and watch this game.
Then I'll ball all night.
Go ahead and ball, and I'll give you the baseball treatment.
What's that?
Four balls, and you'll get your base warmed, like this.
Calling Hanley Stafford to the stand.
Oh, yes, Bob, what is it?
Hanley, we are in receipt of a telegram, which I have been instructed to read to you. Quote, Mr. Hanley Stafford, NBC Studios, Hollywood, California. The National Father's Day Committee, which is organized to better the relation between father and child in the home, recognizes that you were the father of the nation's number one problem child, Baby Snook. Consequently, we bestow upon you the honor of the most patient, long-suffering father in America for the past year. Unquote. Signed, Eddie Cantor for the National Father's Day Committee. Unquote.
Well, really, I don't know what to say, Bob.
I know, Daddy.
Oh, you do, sir? Well, what shall I say?
Just say, thank you very much.
I guess that seems to be about the best thing. Thank you very much for this wonderful honor.
Ain't I smart, Daddy?
Oh, you're wonderful. Come on, sir.
Say, by the way, Carrie Wilson, I'd like to ask you a question. Would you agree that a good cup of coffee is a pretty indispensable part of the average man's pleasure?
What do you think?
Well, we've always thought that coffee is one thing men are especially fussy about. Men seem to catch the difference right away between a rich, smooth, full-flavored cup of coffee and a weak, tasteless cup. And that's why we're pleased that we get so many letters from men telling us how much real satisfaction they get from the rich new Maxwell House. Of course, it's not really surprising, because it was a man, and a very particular man, who created this famous coffee for the Old South. And ever since that day, over 50 years ago, when Joel Cheek created Maxwell House, we've never ceased our efforts to keep improving and enriching this famous blend, to keep it always the coffee that would give you the smoothest, deepest, most flavorful satisfaction money could buy. And today, we're sure you'll find the new Maxwell House is just that, for two very good reasons. First, a way has been found to enrich that famous Maxwell House blend still further. So today, it's richer, more full-bodied, more deliciously satisfying than ever before. And second, there's the amazing new radiant roast process we developed, which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through. So there's no weak coffee due to under-roasting and no bitter coffee due to parching. You get all the true, rich coffee flavor and goodness of the new Maxwell House every time. So, friends, if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, why don't you get a pound tomorrow? See what this famous coffee can mean to you in deep-down coffee satisfaction. We know you'll agree that now, more than ever before, the new Maxwell House is truly good to the last drop. For his concert hall presentation tonight, Meredith Wilson has selected a composition of rare, melodic beauty. The second act intermezzo from The Jewels of the Madonna. Thank you.
Attention, Cincinnati. Tonight, June 15th, in your city, the RKO Palace Theater will bring you the first Cincinnati showing of the new sensational MGM picture, Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Now gather around, gang, for a few words of wisdom.
We've come a long way together since we met on the old village green. We weathered all kinds of weather, and to me you are still sweet 16. Why tear if our hair turns to silver? We still have long to keep our hearts aglow. We've come a long way together, and we still have a long way to go.
You've come a long, long way, little Miss Connie. Since you first cut your teeth on Middle Sea, long may you reign the favorite daughter of the Swanee and glorify the South in every key.
Thank you, Mr. Bob, and I'll take Martha Wilson. There's the conductingest gentleman that ever was. Now, how could anyone be born in Mason City and learn to wave that little stick the way he does?
Thank you, Connie. And I'll vote for Colonel Morgan. Frank has come as far as anybody that I know. His career has brought him friends, fame, and stardom. And he still has a long way to go.
Well, if Frank were here, I know he'd call on Pam. And that lovable, exasperating kid. Why, she's brought more laughs and chuckles to more people than 100,000 joke books ever did.
Thank you, Warren. And now I'll pass the palm to Handley. He has made a great career of getting mad. And he's a gentleman, a trooper, and an artist.
And a better daddy no girl ever had.
Thank you, Fanny. And now for all of us, his honor, Robert Young, our pride in you, you'll never know. You brought the Good News Gang a long way together.
And we still have a long way to go.
Next week, another Gala Good News show. The Wizard Frank Morgan is expected back from New York. And a special treat will be the return of our popular singing star, Tony Martin. And, of course, the regular gang will be here, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Connie Boswell, Francis Arms, Meredith Wilson, and his orchestra.
Hey, Bob, here's some good news for you. At a sneak preview of your new picture, Maisie, the other night, everyone says you scored a great big hit. And believe me, the Good News Gang are proud of you and happy to hear it.
Well, thank you, Warren. I hope all my friends everywhere feel as you do when they see Maisie. It's a story of the West, and I certainly hope you like it. So, until next Thursday night, this is Bob Young saying good night.
Next Sunday, thousands of retail grocers from every section of the country are meeting at Kansas City for the 42nd Annual Convention of the National Association of Retail Grocers. Our heartiest greetings go out to the grocers of the nation. May their convention be the greatest ever held. Warren Howell saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.